Possession number 12243, Captain de Courcy Island, Reel 2.
Courcy Island, Reel 2. We're talking about your time at Osborne and the use of the mast.
Yeah.
You had an incident you recall.
There was a member of my time called Scott, who was the son of a very famous admiral, Sir Percy Scott. And he had a poor head for heights. And I can remember him when we were doing mast drill. He lost his head for heights completely, and he got as far as holding on to the crow's nest like that, and then he couldn't go any further, and there he stuck, whereupon the instructor climbed up to the other side. The instructor would have been the petty officer of the term. We had a petty officer in each term in charge of us for various things. He climbed up, and he just trod on his fingers until he let go, where he fell into the safety net, of course, down below. And that was that.
That seems a bit cruel. What did you think of it?
We thought, that'll learn him.
Did you suffer from heights at all?
No, I had a good head for heights then.
Anything else you remember about Osborne before you went on to Dartmouth?
No, other than the fact that I got chicken pox for the second time, which everybody told me was impossible to. My mother always denied that. But that's all I can remember. We used to get these epidemics. There was another curious thing about Osborne, that a lot of the classrooms were built around a courtyard which had been the old stables, and there were troughs, stone troughs, around the edges of it like that, which presumably the horses used to drink out of. And it was done that there were occasions when junior cadets would be ducked into the horse trough, you see. And we got an epidemic of pig eye, which is, your eye goes pink, which is a disease which horses get. And this happened so frequently that then the doctors came to the conclusion that there must be something in this, that this must stop, because they couldn't have all these young gentlemen suffering from pink eye.
Did you get it?
No, I didn't. I don't know why. I avoided that.
Had you been built up? Were you getting stronger while you were at Osborne, or had that not really taken effect yet?
Yes, I should have said more when I was at Dartmouth, perhaps.
Were you fairly happy while you were there? I mean, did you think you'd made the right decision at that stage?
I never gave it a thought. Really, that was life. I just took it as it came.
And you weren't homesick?
No.
Towards the end of your time at Osborne, the war broke out.
Yes.
Were you aware at all of the international situation during early 1914 and then leading up to August?
I shouldn't have said so, not really. I mean, we knew that the war, when the war broke out and all that sort of thing, and of course there was, it made such an impact on the college, you see. But we really, you see, we left Osborne at the end of 14. And I had gone on leave from Osborne about the time I says wars broke out. Because I remember when I got back to Kingswear, I remember all the cadets of the college being sent to sea. They were playing cricket over our side, the cricket team.
The Dartmouth.
They were playing cricket over our side when the order came. And I was on leave from Osborne because we'd broken up earlier, you see. At any rate, I remember seeing them all off from Kingsway Station. We came down and the women were all, you know, doing their stuff. And we gave them sweets and things like that. And the college was emptied.
I should have asked, actually. There'd been the big naval review at Spithead.
That's
in
right.
July. So
yeah.
All
the cadets from Osborne were appointed to ships. And I was, I suppose, about half a dozen others, went to a ship called the Centurion. And we lived on board for 2 or 3 days, I suppose.
That was
for the review.
Quite a modern ship.
Yes. And the only thing I can remember about that is that the food seemed rather better than we got at the college. We had a sort of lieutenant who looked after us, who had been called a snotty's nurse. I remember I was allowed to... When they fired the salutes for royalty and all that sort of thing, I was allowed to man a gun and fire a practice round of the salute. That sort of thing, which of course was a great thrill.
What sort of a sight was it? It's supposed to have been a magnificent occasion.
Oh, it was. It was.
Do you remember it?
Well, a mass of ships. Mass of ships. You see lines of them all out in the Solent. Like that, with boats going everywhere from ship to ship and ship to shore and all that sort of thing. And then, of course, a sort of inspection by the royalty.
Now, the actual outbreak of war, you've been in Kingsmere.
Yes.
What did your family think of the outbreak of war? How did they react? Because, the possibility of you being involved in it, what did they...
Well, of course, it shook them. It shook them tremendously. Both my brothers, one I had, my eldest brother was at Cambridge doing a degree. My second brother was still at Sherborne. They'd both been at Sherborne. He was still at Sherborne. And my eldest brother joined up first of all as a private, I think. And he then got his commission, and my second brother got his commission straight away. He's very clever. So they were right in it from the start, if you see what I mean. So far as I was concerned, I was my parents never seemed to worry very much about me. And I'm sorry to say that I probably didn't worry all that about them.
What happened when you would you recall from your leave? You were at Kingsmere. Was your leave being pulled back or end of term or whatever it was?
We happened to, for some reason or other, Osborne broke up before Dartmouth did. That's why I was at home, I know, when they went to sea. I don't remember really.
Now, what happened when you got back to the autumn term, or whatever you call it? You said it had a big impact on Osborne, the outbreak of war. Could you tell me what difference it made?
Oh, simply because, of course, that all the officers and that sort of thing were all sort of had to go to sea, you see. The same thing happened at Dartmouth. Everything, all the officers changed, you see. And one got retired people. And some of the masters joined up, you see, also. So that, for example, I remember at Dartmouth, the commander was a retired chap. And he was a most peculiar man. I don't think he'd done very much in the Navy, but he was a farmer, he said, when he was called up again. And he had 200 sheep in his farm, and everyone had its own name. And I can remember saying to him, "How on earth, sir, did you ever know enough names to call 200 sheep of the names?" He said, "Well, perfectly simple. Call one Tom, the other Tommy, and the other Thompson, and Johnny Johnson." He reeled them all off. But in other words, everything was very changed, if you can see. We even noticed that.
And that's happened at both colleges?
That happened at both colleges. Everything was very changed.
When you were at Osborne, did you actually think that you'd be involved in the war, or were you carried away with the idea it would be over by Christmas, or whatever the rumour was at the time?
Never gave it a thought. I just got on with things. I mean, I don't think we ever thought that we'd be sent to sea like that.
No. You moved over to Dartmouth.
Yeah.
And could you describe the setup at Dartmouth?
Well, Dartmouth was a time I enjoyed tremendously, because I said that I had my boat in the river. The petty officer, our term, who really has got great power over what goes on and discipline and that sort of thing. It was a very, very... He was a chap who'd been called back, you see. A man called Levers. A very strict disciplinarian, but a very good man. He knew that I kept my boat the other side of the Britannia, where you couldn't see it from the college. He knew that I would get into one of the college boats, go around the back there, shift into plain clothes, and off I went, you see. But he never said anything. He was that type of man. He turned the other cheek. He knew perfectly well, I'm certain of that. I was extremely surprised. You said, "How did I get on?" I was frightfully surprised to find myself head of my term in engineering, until I realized that three of the instructors down at the engineering place sang in my father's choir. And one of them remarks to my father, "I think your son's doing quite well, you know." That did surprise me.
So, the Britannia was the...
The Britannia was an old wooden battleship, which was moored on the dart opposite the college, or down below, you see, in the water. And it had been the college until your father was there, wasn't she? Oh, I mustn't say that. Her father was he did his training in the Britannia. She then, when they built the college in 1904, then their ship was emptied. But it was left there, and it remained there for many years.
Was it used as classrooms or anything?
No, I don't think it was used for anything very much. She was broken up. I remember when they towed her away and broke her up, that would have been after the war, I think, 18 or 19. That stool there is made from her timbers. And so is that. That's a Britannia stool. Yeah.
How did the daily routine differ at Dartmouth, or was it pretty well the same as at Osborne?
It was more like a public school, really.
More so than Osborne?
Oh, yes. Where you could say that Osborne was more like the end of a preparatory school, and then Dartmouth was really a sort of beginning of a public school, that sort of thing. It was a different life in the sense that we were given more rope, if you like to put it that way. You had to do, as I say, a log, as they called every day, which meant you either had to go for a run, or there was a pack of beagles run by the college, and you could go beagling. That was quite a popular thing.
Did you do that?
Yes, yeah. But I was mainly, if I could get away, I'd send my boat, you see. We used to go and do a lot of fishing, As I say, my father was keen and liked all that sort of thing. It was a wonderful life, you see. And I, of course, because I knew so many people all around there. I only had a year of it. And then they suddenly decided to send us to sea, you see.
Had the syllabus developed at all? I mean, you mentioned already that the engineering got more complicated. I presume so did the navigation.
Yes, it got more and more detailed as you grew up.
Had you done the things like knots and splices or all that sort of thing?
Oh yes, you did that. Yeah.
What about the theory of actual tactics? Was that coming in by then? Actual naval tactics, the modern naval tactics, things like that, gunnery, things like that.
Yes, you did gunnery. Oh yes, so definitely.
Was there a gun out?
Oh yes, you did gunnery.
Had there been one at Osborne?
Not that we ever used very much. No, I don't think so. I don't remember.
What gun did they have at Dartmouth?
Oh, it would probably have been, I suppose, a 6-pounder or I think it had, yes, about 6-pounders, I think.
Would you actually practice gun drill?
Only very elementary there. Yeah, it mainly came later on.
People often talk about the Navy looking back to the age of sail.
Yes.
Around that time, rather than the reality of battleships, you know.
Yes.
Did you feel that was true, or did you feel that the Navy was progressive and that the?
Oh yes, we had nothing to do with the age of sail, as you might say, other than the boat sailing, that sort of thing. That was the part that interested me. This boat I had, my parents, we built it, had it built by an old boat builder just above the college in Mill Creek. Beautifully built, 14.5-foot sailing dinghy. And it cost £8.10. God knows what it cost today. Beautifully, beautifully built. A lot.
And you actually really enjoyed that side of...
Oh, yes, yes, yes.
Was it much use to you in the Navy?
Oh, yes, I think it did. Yes, definitely, because I enjoyed sailing in the Navy, you see.
Did you actually get out on any cruises? I mean, you know, with ships while you were...
No, there were things called... No, there were only things like picket boats, that sort of size. We didn't do any of the stuff where they've had, you know, destroyers and things like that, trading ships later on. We had nothing of that.
So they didn't have the training cruise system?
No, of course there was a war.
Did you have any rifle drill or anything like that?
Oh yes, I think so. But only very elementary. I don't know, they did have much rifle drill, I think, in Moores and Midshipmen.
Did the war have a big impact on you that year, 1915, or as opposed to on the college? I mean, did it impinge on your life much? Or?
I think we all used to sort of have these maps of where the front was and that sort of thing, which we used to get in those days. Yes, I suppose as boys we were interested in what was going on and at sea, but one knew very little of sea, what was going on at sea, because nobody was allowed to talk about that sort of thing.
A lot of the people you'd seen off at Dartmouth would have been involved in the Hogue, Abercair, Crescent, and even indeed somewhere on the Monmouth as well, which were the two great disasters of the Battle of the...
That's right.
Were you aware of that?
Not at the time.
So how did you come to go to sea then? You didn't actually finish at college, did you?
No. We were just told we were going to sea. I don't remember how much notice they gave us. we were allowed, they said that we could, somebody would go to various ships, about four in a ship, big ships, the battleships, you see, and we were allowed to, as far as they could do it, go with our friends. That is to say that I joined a ship called the Bellerophon, which was a battleship, and myself and Anthony Mullins, my friend, and Leslie Baker, and there was a fourth one who joined up with us at Dartmouth called Robinson. His father was an admiral. And we four went to the Bellerophon.
What did you take with you? I mean, what would you take, a sea chest, would you, or would you get a new sea chest when you...
Took my sea chest.
And that would have everything you required?
That's it, yeah.
And you would, were you joining as a cadet or as a midshipman?
Midshipman. Midshipman.
So you got, you'd been given that early then to go to sea?
Yes, as you got your appointment.
Were you pleased to be sent to a big ship?
Well, I didn't... I knew it was inevitable, I think.
That's what most cadets...
Yes, well, at any rate, during the war, you see, that was what happened, yeah.
What do you remember about the journey? Would she be at Scapa?
Yes, I was at Scapa.
What do you remember about the journey up there?
Oh, we went in the naval train from London up right to Zerster and Scrabster and then across in Pentland Firth to a depot ship where we were collected by the ships we were going to.
And that was...
I do remember one thing. We stopped at Invergordon on the way up, you did, for breakfast. You travelled up overnight, you see, by train. You stopped for breakfast at Invergordon. And we had an hour or so to stretch our legs, and we started walking down the town, and we ran into an enormous funeral. And I should think there must have been, I don't know, coffin after coffin. And we weren't supposed to know anything about it, but you know, you picked up and that sort of thing. It was the Natal. Were blown up, and these are the bodies that you covered, and that rather impressed us.
So you went up, and you trained at Thurso in the book. What about the crossing? How did you actually get to Scapa?
Oh, there was a regular run every day, you see. For all sorts of people and that sort of thing.
Well, it's
a biggish ferry type of steamer.
Not a naval?
No.
And what were your first impressions on getting to the Bellerophon?
Pretty strange. You were a wart, which is the lowest form of creature there is in the Navy, junior midshipman. We lived in the midshipman's flat. You slung a hammock there.
What was the flat like? The flat like? How big would it be?
Oh, I suppose half as big again as this room.
About 10 foot across.
Yeah, that sort of thing. Yes.
And how many would there be of you?
About 24, I think, in the gun room.
So it'd be
with a sub.
Crowded.
Oh yes, I mean your hammocks were just about touching.
Was this your first experience with hammocks, or had you had them at Dartmouth?
No, it's the first experience. Yeah.
How did you get on with them the first time?
Oh, I think you got used to them, I suppose. It was a bit strange at first, but they're very comfortable. Really.
Where would you put your sea chest?
Underneath, practically. Yes, just now. Yeah.
Would they have the large table like the seaman's? A table like the seaman's?
We had a gun room, you see. The ship was curious in the sense that, unlike most naval ships, the officers lived forward, right in the front end, and the men aft, which is very curious. The gun room and the wardroom were right in the bows.
Was there a reason for that?
Not that I knew of. No, it's just his design. I don't know why, but that's how it was. And we were a co-burning ship, you see.
So the gun room, that was where you lived and...
The gun room was where you lived and messed. Had your food, you know, that sort of thing. And, it did your instruction. Or when you had to write things.
So what other furniture would you have there? Would you have to stow the hammocks during the...
No, the hammocks stowed in the mid's chest flat. There are hammock netting down there. And your sea chest down there. In the gun room, you had a locker where you kept writing things and books, that sort of thing. Odds and ends.
Who was responsible for keeping the room clean, the gun room?
Midshipman.
Was it done on a rota, or was it just done, everybody did it every day?
Well, you had your jobs. You'd polish the scuttles or clean the scuttles or the table or something like that.
So it was set. It was you divided the jobs amongst you.
Yes. So there were duty midshipmen who were responsible for certain things, and you took it in turn, a rota, so that sort of thing, really. But
who would be in charge of the gun room?
The Somerston. We were rather peculiar because I was 15 and a half, but our senior midshipmen, some of them were 21, which is quite a difference. They were the first lot of what they called public school entries. We used to call them public house entries, just to show our superiority.
Now, I know from the thing that you were beaten just for joining the ship. I mean...
Oh, yes,
There's an induction ceremony.
That's right, yeah.
Was that a proper beating?
Oh, yes. I mean, you... when you were beaten, you went down to the mids bathroom, which was a long, narrow place, with a row of bowls you washed in. There was one long bath, which was filled with two-thirds of water every day, and that had to do for a lot of us. The sub usually used the bath. There were various little tin things you could stand in and trickle some water down yourself. But that's where, when you had to be chastised, you were taken down to the bathroom, and they took the bowl out of this long thing like that, and you stuck your head down there, leant over and stuck your head down there, then you were beaten. If you went like that, you cut your neck at the back.
What were you beaten with, a cane or...?
Yes, if you were beaten, you had to go and collect a cane from the master's arms, which was used to beat the boys, the seamen boys. And if you were clever, you then stuck it down your trousers and pretended that you hadn't got anything. But you had to come back through the mess decks on your way to the gun room. And, of course, all the sailors used to chai aiku. Just like that. You were either beaten... or the other punishment, which was more unpopular, was mastheading. If you had committed a misdemeanor, like you smashed the gangway of your picket boat, or you'd done something on watch you shouldn't do, or hadn't done it, then you'd be mastheaded, and that meant you had to go up to time up to the crow's nest, which was about 80 feet above the sea, I suppose, for so many hours. That was unpopular, not because of being up there, but that if you were up there during a mealtime, the duty midshipman had to carry your food up to you. That was very unpopular.
Any other punishments used?
No. I mean, if you had committed a serious offence, as you might say, then of course you could be arraigned before the commander or the captain and dealt with in that way. But that, you know, as I say, Mitchum was treated as Mitchum.